Hello, everyone, and welcome back to James Cameron's Titanic Scene by Scene. I'm Brittany Butler.
I am Ethan Brem.
Bam.
I like so awkward saying my own name all the time. I always feel so weird doing it.
I always try to pronounce Butler clearly, but I always feel like it comes out weird because my alliteration, Brittany Butler, is like, I don't know. Anyway.
I never noticed it, but.
So today we are talking about scene 31, Questions of Character. That is the name of this scene on the scene selection. And I think that's a pretty good title for it because this one little scene we're talking about is pretty much just an examination of the character of these people that we're following in this particular moment. We see Cal, we see Mr. Andrews, we see the captain, and Guggenheim, briefly. But yeah.
And two of them are just kind of like pensive, like they're just not, there's no actions happening, they're just thinking.
Like, it's called Questions of Character, like oh, you're questioning the character of this person, but it's also just kind of like, how would you act in this situation, you know, sort of thing. And you just kind of see it from a few different perspectives, which is interesting. So, before we get into the scene, I have a quick email I'd like to read. This is from Marky, and the subject is my number one podcast. He says, hey guys, in April 2023, I decided to look for a Titanic podcast since it was Titanic's 111th anniversary. I came across your podcast, and within 1 month, it's become my number one, and I wish I found it sooner. Titanic is my all-time favorite film, and I was 10 years old at the time of its release. I had to beg my parents to see it, and Mom gave in. I saw it in 2012 and this year in 3D. And he goes on saying, like, all these things he has. He has the 4CD soundtrack anniversary, 4CD La La Land Records edition, DVD single edition, 5DVD deluxe with outtakes, trailers, and all that stuff. He has the book that I have, the screenplay book. He's kept magazines, postcards, anything from the film from that time are some of his most treasured items. He goes on to say, I'm also learning new things and seeing some things differently now since listening to the podcast. Big love from Marky in Dublin. And I love this. He says, P.S. I owned goldfish when I was 11 and called them Jack and Rose. Are you ready for this? Jack died on April 14th, 2000.
Whoa.
And then Rose died later on May 16th, my birthday. That's crazy.
Wow, that is crazy. That's weird.
And you put a little thing that says, hope this gets read. So.
Nice, good email.
Had to to read that. For his Jack goldfish to die on April 14th? I mean, granted, crazy. You know, Jack died April 15th, if we're being technical. Okay. But I mean, my God, that is strange. And then for poor Rose to have died on his birthday. Anyway, but thank you, Marky. Very honored that we're your number one podcast.
Yeah, thanks, man.
And
that's cool.
Yeah, just always so nice to hear like comments from people who say that they're seeing things differently or that they're enjoying the podcast on that sort of level, because we've said before, like, mission accomplished if that's what's happening, because that's kind of what we were hoping we'd be able to do with this podcast, just through discussing it, because there is so much to discuss.
Yeah.
Which we will get into again. Right now. It is, I think, thundering and lightning outside my house right now. So I'm right near my my window. I closed it, but you might be able to hear some of that throughout the episode. So
yeah,
just a fair warning. So yes, this is scene 31 for us. This scene starts with them trying to take down yet another collapsible lifeboat. Both scenes started with this. And I guess just continues to heighten the desperation, because especially when they make sure to show a crew member fall on top of this boat when it comes down too. So it's like things are getting, you know, crazy. That always stood out to me. Then it cuts to Cal, who we had previously at the end of the last scene, we saw him kind of turn away after just witnessing three men get shot. So he ran away, and now it cuts back to him, and we see that he ran away to see if that presumably third-class girl was still hiding and crying so that he can use her as a ticket to get on a lifeboat. So he goes to get her, and it's just so slimy how he does that.
It's so weird.
I mean, he's rushing back to find this girl, picks her up, and then immediately turns on the acting. I have a child! I'm just like,
so gross.
I just can't. And I do have to say, I have a child is probably one of my favorite memes to come from this movie. And listening to the historical commentary, they said basically the same thing. Like, Don Lynch said,
you know, every time I'm in a long line at a department store or something, now I want to scream, I have a child, the way Cal does, you know, to get to the head of the line.
I have a child. I'm all she's got in the world.
And I just thought it was funny for him to have mentioned, like, at a department store. I'm like, why would you need to get to the front of the line at Target just because you have a kid?
Okay, this guy's got a kid. He's got to get to the front. You can cut me, man.
Oh, that's great. But yeah, I've seen many memes come from this scene just to keep things a little light right here, just because it's very funny. One of my favorite ones that I saw was, it said, it was like me when I'm doing my tax write-offs for the year, and it's Cal holding the kid, but they photoshopped a dog onto the kid to be like, I have a child, like, please let me use my dog's expenses as tax write-offs.
That's awesome. I don't have kids, but I have a dog.
Yes, I have a child.
Doesn't count, sir.
It's like, my dog is basically my child. That was just a recent meme related to the scene that I had seen that I thought it was great.
That is good.
But yeah, I didn't realize that was kind of like a meme from this movie until recently. And then I saw, like, you could buy like a sticker or something on Redbubble that just says, I have a child in all caps. And like behind the writing is Billy Zane's face from the scene.
I have a child.
It's his delivery too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh man. And then the way he has to take it one step further by saying, I'm all she has in the world.
Yeah.
With the fluttering eyes.
But like, doesn't this guy know who Cal... Wasn't Cal, like, a big deal on the ship?
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, there's Hockley... In James Cameron's verse, there is Hockley Steele in the Titanic.
Yeah. I immediately was like, wouldn't he know who Cal is? But maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, there was... Like, we said in a past episode, apparently Officer Lowe didn't even know who Ismay was.
Yeah.
Until after the fact. So, and he was the owner of White Star Line, you know what I mean? So odds are he might not have known.
Yeah, it's true.
But even as a kid, it always stood out to me. I was like, why would they think that this clearly first class man in a three-piece suit would have any relation to this girl who looks like she is probably third class, maybe second class. But you know what I mean? It doesn't add up.
Yeah, that's true, actually. That's funny. No, also, like, he has to be, like, one of the few first-class people still left now. Mm. I don't know. I guess he's a guy, so maybe some of the men were still in there.
Yeah. And then I just said again in my notes, I mentioned the fluttery expression, because he does the fluttering of the eyes. Yeah. And he makes the little pouty face.
He tries to get there, for sure.
Very slimy. So they let him through, and he makes it onto the lifeboat with the little girl, and he... A woman originally says, give her to me, and then he takes her back and says, there, there. And I go, he has to act and pretend like he cares.
So that woman was not her mom then?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just...
Okay, that's what I was
to just...
So we don't know what happened to her parents then?
No. Hmm. Nope. So then it cuts to Jack and Rose running through the first class smoking room, and they stop when they see Mr. Andrews standing there at the fireplace. Now... In my notes as I was taking them, I said, we see Andrew standing there clearly with, like, no intention of saving himself whatsoever. And we know this when Rose asks him, like, aren't you even going to make a try for it? And, you know, he's not. And I just said, it's an interesting choice to put this scene back to back with Cal. For some reason, that never really stood out to me before until now. And I think that was definitely meant to show a clear contrast between someone who just did such a slimy thing to guarantee himself a spot on that lifeboat versus this man who's just going to go down with the ship. But
yeah, I mean, he's like the one of the fan favorites too, because the whole arc just. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, I guess like in relation to Cal using the little girl to get on the boat.
Mm.
Cameron said that there were reports of men who would put on like women's shawls and stuff like that to try to get onto a boat. I think there's even a deleted scene where they're like, after their, oh God, did you see that?
Was it the light, like a light?
What yeah, because it's thundering.
Thunder?
Lightning.
Lightning?
Watch, my internet will go out. And there's the thunder.
Oh, yeah, I hear them. Not too loud.
Yes, so I think there's even a deleted scene when they're trying to go back to the ship after it already sank. I mean, go back to, like, the passengers in the water. They try to load people out of one boat and into another one, and while they're doing that, they notice that one of the people was actually a man who was hiding this whole time. So they threw that in there, but anyway, so I feel like that's kind of like Cal doing this sort of thing with the little girls, just one other example of something that you know, someone might have done.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so this is what Cameron had to say about Andrews.
So it was reported that Thomas Andrews was last seen at the fireplace in the first class smoking room, which was well aft. So this is a fictional moment where we're converging our fictional story with history. But imagine what it would have felt like for Andrews to know that the end was nigh, that his great ship, his great creation, was about to die, and people that he cared for that were in his charge, like Rose, you know, were going to die as a result of it. You know, I think that would have been a almost unfathomable sense of crushing sense of responsibility for him. And he was last seen staring at that painting over the fireplace by a steward as he was fleeing.
What was the painting of?
And that I forgot to look it up, what that painting actually was, whether or not this movie got it right or this movie got it right. Or
so what was it in the James Cameron movie though?
I know, I'm trying to remember. I couldn't
get a great look at it. That's why I didn't know.
It has something to do with New York.
Oh, okay.
Maybe, and I think that's kind of symbolic.
That would have been a good, yeah, that would have been a good choice, because it's like he'll never get to
see
it again. Yeah. Also, I also thought it was interesting, because it's like, even though he feels this responsibility and guilt, he's also not really quite able, he's only able to save so many people because he's not one of the officers, and he's not, so you can tell he really has this passion to try to keep saving people. And then it's one final, I thought it was a beautiful moment when he hands Rose the life jacket,
mm-hmm,
as like his final save, like the final person he gets to save was with that life jacket. I thought that was a cool moment.
I know, I'm trying to see if, when I searched for Titanic first class smoking room painting, it comes up. I think it's a painting called Plymouth Harbor.
Mm.
So now I want to know. So yeah, not New York, I don't think. Ah, in A Night to Remember, they used a painting of New York. Mm. I knew it was coming in somewhere. It looks like in A Night to Remember, you can see the Statue of Liberty, it looks like.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, it's thundering really bad where I'm at, guys. I'm sorry if you can hear that. I try my best to minimize background noise, but if you can hear that, I'm sorry. My house is like shaking. In A Night to Remember, the painting is by Norman Wilkinson, and it's called Approach to the New World.
Okay.
But yeah, I knew there was something related to New York with the painting. According to, when you do a Google search, the main thing that shows up is the Plymouth Harbor painting. Okay. So now I just really want to know if that's the one in Titanic. I gotta try to find it.
I wonder if the folks at Pigeon Forge could help us out.
Trying to get a look. I think it is.
Is that Plymouth one?
Yeah.
Who's the artist?
Also by Norman Wilkinson.
Oh, weird. Is that Plymouth Rock then?
Maybe. Wow, that is the correct painting in the movie. Good on you, James Cameron, and everyone who is in charge of the set design and everything. I mean, wow.
Pretty cool.
Wow. And yeah, I guess that kind of leads us to a clip from the historical commentary where they kind of, you know, talk about the accuracy of the movie and how good it is and everything. Just makes me happy to hear them say this. I guess they were saying that this scene of Mr. Andrews at the painting and the fireplace was also kind of a tip of the hat to A Night to Remember, which many things in the movie are nods to A Night to Remember. But so they just kind of started talking at that point about it, and they just kind of go on a little bit. So I'll just play that.
Every so often, there's a little something that's come from another movie, such as A Night to Remember, which prior to Titanic was considered the best movie. And in this scene, you see this glass slide off the mantle, and that's similar to what happened in A Night to Remember. And I see it as Jim sort of tipping his hat to this earlier movie that was really quite good. But if you had to ask me today which movie is the most accurate and would best educate you about the sinking of the Titanic, it has to be this one. It has to be Titanic.
And I would say that definitely that's true, you know, as regards the way the ship really looked and the ambiance on the real ship.
Yes.
This would be the movie to see.
And this is an
again, because I'm the rivet counter and I'm all about sets and props and all of that stuff. So it's, I can't vouch for the acting and who said what and who stood where as you can, but the sets are unsurpassed.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that goes for any movie of any historical event. I think Titanic's still, like, got to be the most accurate. Factual and production design and just everything.
While also still managing to be a blockbuster.
Yeah, and fiction, crazy. Really. I mean, and fiction about the main characters are fictional, so... It's we've talked about it ad nauseum.
Yes.
It's just insane how people care that it's about people who didn't exist. It's insane. But anyway.
I loved hearing that come from the historians. I mean, of course they worked on the movie as well, so they're a little biased. But still, as people who deeply love, you know, the historical story of the Titanic, you know, they really go hard defending this movie. And
oh yeah, and historians like typically almost all of them are really have a lot of reverence for the James Cameron movie.
I mean,
when you talk to
a lot of the ones online, if you look at people online, it seems like they don't, but I think,
but like you go to, if you go to like the Pigeon Forge Museum,
we or
the,
know or Ethan the, like,
but like they love the movie, like they all really really love the James Cameron movie. I think there's, you have to.
Oh, yeah. Also, in this scene, they had said that the actors had to lean a little bit.
I was going to ask you if you knew if that was a camera or if it was the set was leaning or what.
So they had to, like, stand at an angle. And I always did notice that. Like, Victor Garber seems like he's tilting a little too much.
A little bit, yeah. So it's the cameras are tilted, not the platform.
Yes. So for some reason, the set that they built this in... the first class smoking room, for whatever reason, this one was not tilted. It was not on an incline. It was just straight.
But some of them were?
Yeah, the main set was. Like, everywhere else they filmed was pretty much built to sink.
Okay.
But I guess this room wasn't.
Interesting.
And so they had to put the camera at an angle. They had to put all the drinks on the mantle. And so they put, like, jelly in the cup to look like tilted liquid.
Cool.
And then they were able to pull it off the mantle with a little invisible string and stuff like that to sort of sell the moment and have the actors stand at a...
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. With that final shot of Andrews when they run away and he's left standing there, that's where it's just a little bit obvious to me that he's holding himself that way. Like, consciously tilting. What else did I say about this? Yes, when he tells Rose, "I'm sorry, I didn't build you a stronger ship." That's such a sad line.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, like I think as James Cameron said, like this burden that he must feel for being literally responsible for the creation and building of this ship that is meeting this tragic end and taking many people with it. You know, I just can't. It's just a lot. And you think that, you know, the real Andrews probably had similar feelings as the architect and the shipbuilder. You know, it's just... Huh. And I also jotted down that they kind of, I think we mentioned this maybe before, but there's kind of like a familial dynamic between Rose and Andrews, by especially by this point.
Because you don't ever see Rose as a father for Rose.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so,
and the way they hug as well, you know what I mean? I think that's interesting. And I noted that Jack kind of gives the tiniest of little nods as they run off. Like, you blink and you miss it, but he gives them, like, a tiny little nod as they run away.
Yeah.
Because he says, I always wonder, like, he says, good luck to you. I think he only says Rose. Because as a kid, I always thought he said, like, good luck to you both. I thought what I heard. But I'm pretty sure he's, like, just talking to Rose. Like, he knows Jack doesn't stand
a
chance.
You're going to die, but you...
Oh, man. We actually got, like, a really long email, like, now that you mentioned, like, this father thing, like, the way she doesn't have a father figure. We got a really long email about the Not Without You scene and how that can kind of tie into Rose's lack of a father figure. But it's very long, and that's, like, another conversation, so maybe we'll read that another time. But it's just interesting that you mentioned that. So, yes, and the way he offers her the life jacket is a nice gesture. Because he's not using it, you know, so it's the last thing he can do. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
We see a shot of Benjamin Guggenheim coming down the first class staircase, and him and his manservant are together, and they're dressed in their best and prepared to go down as gentlemen, as they say, which apparently is accurate. That line itself and the lore behind him having done that is accurate. But then James Cameron had to tack on, but we would like a brandy.
It's always time for brandy.
But yeah, always run for comedy, as we said. James Cameron will put that in there.
Textbook jam cam.
So something I mentioned in my notes during that Guggenheim scene was I said that I actually really like how Cameron had decided to populate the ship in that moment, in that scene, with kids running by in the background.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why that just stood out to me. Like, you hear kids screaming in the background. It sounds like she's saying, like, Mommy, wait, like, or something, and they're, like, running up the stairs.
Like, not everything has to be focused on those people. It can just be passing through and building the world in that way.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, just like another small reminder that it's not just, you know, stuffy rich people walking around. You know, there were kids running around and just stood out to me. So then we see Captain Smith on deck, fully catatonic-like at this point. And I think we've mentioned it before in the past that this is another character that some people take issue with the portrayal of. But I think he has some of the most emotionally effective scenes as someone, you know, at the top of the food chain on this ship, you know, as well as this, everything tied into his story as well, with it potentially, this is being supposed to be his final crossing. This was, you know, he's supposed to retire after this. You couldn't even imagine this being your final journey. So I had just said that the character is very resigned at this point. We see, like, the different passengers approach him asking for help, like the woman with the baby. There's a man who it seemed like was the man, like, trying to offer his life vest to the captain, I think. But of course he just rejects it, walks right by.
Yeah, he's not gonna take.
And he just sort of looks around at the sinking Titanic and just can't believe it. Goes to the bridge, takes a look at it being submerged underwater quickly, and then he walks into the wheelhouse, locks himself in there, and that's where he is going to die.
It's a haunting ending to the scene. I forget the actor's name who plays him, but
Bernard Hill,
great facial actor. His eyes are, like, so telling of everything. Like, you can really, they're super nuanced, and, like, you can really, his eyes are even kind of haunting in the way that he acts. Like, he has these really good, like, it'd be great in, like, a horror movie or something. I don't know what his resume entails, but, you know, he just has, like, those really, really effective eyes.
Yes.
To convey this arc. Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, really good. And just him walking, so, like you said, catatonically is a great word for that. But,
So this is what Cameron had to say about Captain Smith.
What happened with the captain in the final moments is controversial. Different people have reported different things, seeing him go to the bridge, seeing him swimming away from the ship. Nobody really knows what happened to him, so we've just we've created a moment here. The woman with the baby represents all of the lives who are in his care that that he was not able to save. In other words, he didn't discharge his duties properly. As a result, they died. I like this moment where he goes to the bridge, which is the place where he would have felt the most comfortable, the sort of seat of his authority, and just see it slowly submerging. I thought that was very poignant, and I think, you know, Bernard Hill did a great job with the captain. You just really feel the weight of all that just in his every movement, every expression.
Yeah, people don't realize there's so much symbol, like every decision that a director makes is like so meticulous. Like everything he's doing, it's symbolizing the sinking of his authority, or like, you know, where he's comfortable and he doesn't even have that. And it's like all these things that James Cameron's thinking about mm-hmm. the whole time. That's crazy. Yeah, the commentaries are great. If someone's hasn't gotten into commentaries for movies yet, you got to get, they're eye-opening, like when you start listening to them, yeah.
And again, just like goes to show how much is lame phrase to use, but below the surface of yeah. Titanic as a movie, you know, just a scene as simple as this, you know, James Cameron was thinking of a lot of different things. He was thinking of symbolism. He was thinking of, you know, we're not just having a random person coming up. It's going to be a woman with a baby who's going to symbolize this. And then, you know, Captain yeah. Smith's going to walk to the bridge, which symbolizes this. And whatever, you know, so
yeah,
he was definitely thinking.
So he was playing it like he was kind of abandoning his duties then, right? Or like,
I think he said it was, all of this was the result of him not doing his duties well enough, I guess. So that's sort of why he's resigned.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Or at least that's how he meant to.
Yeah.
Present it.
I think people like his arc too because it's more complex than, say, Andrews, where it's like, okay, Andrews didn't do anything wrong. He just, you know, but whereas the captain was literally at the helm, you know, mm-hmm. at least as a figurehead at any given time. But it's not black and white like it is with Andrews. Like Andrews, you understand his guilt, but he didn't do anything. He literally didn't do anything wrong. But
this is what the historians had to say about Captain Smith and everything surrounding that.
He seemed to need a lot of help. A lot of the major decisions that were made that night were suggested to him, and then he would acknowledge them and agree with them.
Seemed to be sort of have to be coaxed almost in a way.
Yeah,
shouldn't we lower the boats now, sir?
Yeah, he'd certainly never been in this type of situation. He'd never had a ship sink out from under him
before. And you can just imagine what he was going through—a wife and a child back home—and this is supposed to be the crown to a long career. This was the final round trip, taking the maiden voyage of Titanic. Once he returned to England on the eastbound voyage.
2,200 people under his care, and he knows they're not going to all survive.
And he was going to retire.
It stood out to me as like a powerful point that he had never had a ship sink beneath him before.
Yeah, I mean.
And so, yeah. I mean, that just adds more to the portrayal, I think, because, you know, not only was this supposed to be his final crossing, but this has also never happened to him before. So
you can have 100 successful crossings, but you know, you have one tragic one, and that's what your legacy is. It's like a gladiator. Like you can survive how many fights, and then you lose your last one, you're dead.
Like the one that it had to be the last one. You know, it's crazy. Yeah. But yeah, I want to see if there's anything else that I have written here. Yeah, I think that's all of the notes that I have for this scene. Wow, we made it through. For anyone listening, we recorded two scenes today. The scene that came before this one and now this one. We had to do that because reasons, but yeah.
We used to do it all the time, actually.
We did, but we haven't done it in a while, but we had to this time.
I think we've done like three it's a couple times.
We used to, yeah. But that was like earlier in the movie. There wasn't maybe as much to talk about.
Yeah, definitely wasn't as long.
I was apparently doing way too many impressions back then. That's what we were spending time doing.
That's what it was. That's why.
No. I honestly feel so bad. We had gotten another review from someone, a new review from someone that called out my impressions. And I said, I feel so bad because that was like in the early episodes, you know, because, you know, if we're saying if we're maybe going to have 40 to 45 episodes total, I think I maybe started scaling them back a bit because I wasn't even aware that I was doing it until people started saying things about it. So I think maybe started scaling them back like 15 episodes in or something. So it's just unfortunate that anybody who listens to the podcast and starts from the beginning hears all of that and they feel compelled to leave a bad review because...
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I like the impressions. Second of all, it's like you watch your favorite sitcom, like the first few episodes are clunky. We were still new to podcasting in general.
Yeah, it's weird.
We had just started our first podcast like only mere months before that.
True.
I believe.
Or maybe at least a year, but we were still like...
It was beginning of 2019 when we started this one and we started the other one in 2018, right?
So yeah, we were still new, yeah. And there are two very different podcasts, right? So like on the other one, impressions and stuff were welcomed.
Yeah.
But on this one...
It's about a sitcom.
It's not really the same.
Yeah, this is a different... Yeah, but also just the tone and how we're analyzing this is different than how we were analyzing something. A sitcom, it's more, you know, it's more of like funny and like, oh, this is silly. Like we're making fun of its quirks of a show that we love. Whereas like this, it's like we're analyzing kind of like high art in a sense, you know, so it's a little bit different.
But I just feel so bad. Like I've said before, I really want to go back and remove some of those just because it's like
do not George Lucas our podcast.
Because then the few reviews that mention it will make no sense. People will be like, what were they talking about? There's no impressions here. Rewriting history.
Do not do that.
I just hate that had to come in the beginning, but yeah, I'm really happy with, especially like I think we said that we mentioned, you know, these episodes since we've returned from the quote-unquote great hiatus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think 2 years away actually, you know, did us some good. You know, I think, I feel like for some reason, over those 2 years, I guess I had maybe grown up a bit, which I didn't really notice much until I sat down to do this again, but...
I'm proud of our early episodes, to be honest. I listen to them sometimes. I like them.
Yeah. I mean, me too. I mean, like, while we were on break, I had listened to a bunch of the episodes and those moments did stand out to me more now that I'm aware of them. And that's why I was like,
You're self-conscious because it's you though, you know,
but I still, a lot of what we talked about, I would listen and I would think of something in my head and me from 4 years ago said it after I thought it. So I said, okay,
yeah, I've done that. Yeah.
I was like, okay, so
you're still in the
a lot of things I would maybe want to think to say I said back then. So
yeah. Oh, I'm sure I rub people the wrong way on here too. Plenty.
Please. There are the people who thought that we hated each other or something. Remember that one?
Oh my goodness. That was insane. Yeah. That's ridiculous. No, like, yeah. You and I are like I consider you like one of my really good friends. Aww. There's no way. That's insane.
Thank you. Yeah. Me too, honestly. Like before we started recording. This is just a random outro for this episode for no reason. But yeah, we were saying before we started recording that it's crazy how we've basically known each other for like 7 years now.
Wow. No, it's wild.
Because I feel like I mentioned at one point I had said like, we kind of know each other. Like, I know where you're going to come at from things, like, at this point.
Yeah.
But I feel like when I said that, I felt like some people might have thought that I just meant, like, from the start of the Titanic podcast or something. But
oh, yeah.
I'm like, no, it goes back further.
Yeah, no, like, our first, like, we had, like, a trial run where we just, like, talked before we recorded our first episode of our last podcast. And we were like, oh, well, we clicked, like, really, really well. Yeah. Like, so... this is going to work. Yeah, definitely. It's cool.
Like I mentioned to you too, we've gotten a few comments from people like maybe wondering what we'll do when we're done with this. Cause like, again, I can't believe we're so close to finishing the movie, but we still got more to go. Still lots more conversation to unfold, which I'm really looking forward to, of course. But yeah, obviously we're down to keep talking about things, be it Titanic or whatever, when we're done eventually, but
definitely.
But yeah, so thank you guys so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on all of the socials. Everything will be linked in the description of this episode. Leave us a voicemail via the link at the very bottom. Send us an email, titanicscenebyscene@gmail.com, and we will see you in the next scene.
See ya.